Welcome to Discover Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today we're going to do the DF4Q with Jean-Marie Marbach. The DF4Q, if you didn't know, is the Discover Film 4 questions. That's favorite movie, underrated movie, overrated movie, and a lesser-known film that people should seek out. I was really excited to hear Jean-Marie's DF4Q because his work in commercials and music videos are just brilliant. He won a grand jury prize for his music video Fiebre en la Disco at Film Invasion LA in 2017, and it's such a visual masterpiece, I was really looking forward to what his favorite films were going to be. But what's kind of embarrassing about this DF4Q is that even though I consider myself a cinephile, Jean-Marie's grasp and knowledge of cinema history just kind of put me to shame. So I've got a lot of work to do. In fact, I've already started watching the films he recommends. So listen to this DF4Q and then go get some movies.
I chose three movies and then I realized that all three movies were American movies. And I thought, no, I have to have a French movie in there. So one of my three favorite movies is a French movie called Last Year in Marienbad. Okay, it's a film from Alain René. It's from 1960. It's the first movie I saw which didn't have a clear and obvious plot at first glance and without getting bored by it, because there are a lot of films like this, but this was the first. And the whole movie, it's about a girl being in a castle and there are guests there, but we don't know who they are and what they are, why they're here. And she meets a guy who tells her that they met the year before in Marienbad, but she doesn't have any recollection of it. It's a very surreal movie, and it feels like a dream. It doesn't seem to make any sense, and yet you know deep down that there must be a meaning to all this. And it's very hypnotic, and there's a widescreen black and white cinematography which is beautiful, and I invite you to watch it. It's a movie that I can't stop thinking of since I saw it.
Wonderful.
And it's second is The Swimmer, from directed by Frank Perry, 1968.
Recently someone else mentioned The Swimmer to me. Go on. I haven't seen it.
Well, it has one of the it stars Burt Lancaster, and it has one of the strangest pitch ever, because it's about a middle-aged man living in suburbia, and he realizes one day that his neighbor's pools draw a straight line to his house, and so he decides pool by pool to swim home. And it's a very weird pitch, but makes sense the more you go on with it. And at first, he's welcomed with enthusiasm by the first neighbors. So the first neighbors being the ones living further from his home. And he's welcomed with enthusiasm as if he was an awesome and successful guy. But the welcome becomes cooler and cooler the closer he gets to his place. And because the closer the neighbors are, the better they know him and how he's actually not a success at all. So with each pool, you get to learn a little more about this guy. And I really find this concept brilliant. And I see it as a satire of appearances and life in the suburbs, and also a time capsule of the 60s, which was the end of the 60s was the end of an era. But also a unique movie. It has a very eerie atmosphere, just like Last Year in Marienbad. And Burt Lancaster is in a swimming suit throughout the whole movie, and he gives a great performance. And having an actor with such a commanding presence makes it all the more impressive when we see him falling apart, because he does. And some parts are dated now, and although I like how the story ends, I think the way it's staged is a tad over the top. I mean the ending, but it's still one of my favorites, and it's a good example of a entertaining and rich plot which can be filmed for a very small budget. And obviously that's something I'm especially sensitive to. So The Swimmer, it got released in a beautiful Blu-ray edition 2 years ago, so you have no excuse. You have to see it now.
All right, I will get it. Embarrassingly, someone else mentioned The Swimmer to me not long ago, so I really have to see it.
There were talks of a remake in recent years, not so recent, but with Alec Baldwin. And then Jeff Goldblum as the main part. And although I'm usually not interested in remakes of movies I enjoyed a lot, I was very curious about this one because I believe Alec Baldwin and Jeff Goldblum both have given an interesting take as dashing middle-aged men hiding their failure from the others and also from themselves. Anyway, it never got made, so we'll never know.
Great, great. And you have a third?
Yeah, the third one, which is actually my number one favorite movie, is Blade Runner.
Yes, of course.
Of course. And before I talk about it, I should disclose right away that I'm in the Deckard is a human team. Everything I love about this movie revolves about Deckard being human. We can talk about that if you
we
wish,
can, but I think you've... I don't know if you followed my Facebook rants about the recent Blade Runner film. I think Deckard's definitely human.
It wasn't clear when I... maybe I didn't read. I didn't catch all your Facebook posts. But for me, he's definitely human, yeah. Blade Runner for me is a movie about loneliness and how lonely people have to fight each other to the death because of circumstances, despite of all their common points. And this is very tragic to me, and this is why I like it so much. And Deckard is actually, to my eyes, he's actually so lonely that he gets to fall in love with a replicant, knowing she's a replicant. And I find this very touching. And I must say, I wouldn't care as much about a robot falling in love with another one, nor a robot chasing other robots. And this would hold no interest to me. So Deckard being human is really the main point. It triggers everything else and why I love this movie so much. And when at the end Gaff says it's too bad she won't live, but then again, who does? I don't understand it as you're a replicant too, but as replicants are like humans, they also don't know how much time they have left. So
yeah,
that's why
the ending is so wonderful when they cut off the voiceover where Harrison Ford says, turns out she didn't have an expiration date. Like, ending the film with knowing that she has just a few years till she just expires. Wonderful ending.
Definitely.
And I love hearing you. I mean, here you are. You're a visual artist. And it's obviously one of the most beautifully made films of all time as far as the technical brilliance of it and the visual brilliance of it, and yet it's really is the story that is paramount on your mind, why it's your favorite.
Yeah, despite the visuals, it's the story, and also I must confess the atmosphere. Blade Runner is a movie that I can watch like I'm listening to a music album. I've been listening to these songs for several times, but I can still play them in random order, and Blade Runner acts like this. I can switch from scene to scene and never get tired of it. But also, to get back to the Deckard being human, for me, Deckard being a replicant not only doesn't interest me, but it also doesn't make any sense, because when you look at it, Deckard gets his ass kicked throughout the whole movie, and he's clearly inferior in every way. So how come, if he's a replicant too? And I already discussed this with people who... And they told me, yeah, but he's not an XX6, he's an older model, that's why. Okay, but why would you send an older, obsolete replicant model to take out newer and stronger ones? So besides not being interesting to me, it doesn't make sense. I should point out that this Deckard as a replicant never came up until the second theatrical release of Blade Runner in the 90s. Before that, it was never mentioned anywhere, not in the script, not in the working print, which is available in the Blu-ray box set, not in reviews. And it really looks like, to me, it really looks like it was a talking point meant to rehype a movie which nobody in the public and in the press cared for on the original release. I don't see why people are very fighting the idea of Deckard being human, because it doesn't take anything from the movie. The plot about memories and what makes memories real or not is already there with Rachel, and the replicant not knowing it's a replicant is already there with her. So if you make Deckard a replicant too, that removes a whole lot of interesting sides to the story. So I'll just stick to my interpretation.
I think you should. And it's funny, I don't remember when him being a replicant became a major topic.
Since
it was with the re-release of was the Ridley Scott director's cut that had the footage from Legend that he threw in.
Exactly. I'm glad you mentioned this, because people tell about, you know, mention the unicorn.
Shouldn't be there.
For me, it's really some random dailies coming, not an unused shot from a test, a screen test from Legend.
Yeah, hopefully it was released there too. But before that version came out, I believe the studio released a cut that was the best cut of Blade Runner I've seen in a theater, because it was a cut that didn't have the extra stuff that Ridley put in, but got rid of the silly tag at the end where Deckard says Rachel's going to live forever. I forget what they call that version, but I wonder if it's just been buried now. So now you want to do your lesser known film people should seek out? Yes.
Yes, gladly. So it's a film called Three Strangers, directed by John Negulesco in 1946.
You are a cinephile.
I can't believe all the movies I'm mentioning, you haven't seen them.
I haven't seen. Well, in 1946, you are showing yourself to be someone who cares deeply about the rich history of film. And I mean, I am, but you've got me beat here. Definitely do. I will have to look these up.
You know, in France, you have this kind of institution. It's been going on since the 70s now, and it's called Midnight Cinema. And there's a wonderful movie journalist called Patrick Brion, and you never see him, but he introduces an old movie where it's his voice only, and then you get to see the movie. And it's on Sunday nights and very late, so when I was young, I could not watch it. And my father, he loved movies, and he sometimes woke me up, because it really was at midnight, and he woke me up to watch, you know, the Marx Brothers or, you know, Stuart Granger movies. And my mother obviously was not happy about it, because it was super late. But this is how I came to, these are not movies from my time obviously, but this is how I came to discover them and loved them. The pitch is about a woman played by Geraldine Fitzgerald, who believes in a Chinese legend according to which if three strangers who don't even know each other's name gather at midnight on Chinese New Year around the statue of a Chinese goddess called Quan Yin, and they make the same wish, Quan Yin will open her heart and her eyes to them and make their dreams come true. This was supposed to be a sequel to The Maltese Falcon, but Dashiell Hammett killed it. He reminded Warner Brothers he granted the rights to his characters for one movie only, and he also probably didn't want them to use his characters in a story written by someone else. But the movie got anyway, so they got rid of Bogart, Humphrey Bogart as Sam Spade, and they changed Peter Lorre's and Sidney Greenstreet's character names. So it's the script is co-written by John Huston, and then by another screenwriter who wrote Casablanca. The director of photography was Arthur Edison, who did the wonderful Douglas Fairbanks version of Thief of Baghdad. He did Frankenstein, Casablanca, and also some of the Busby Berkeley musicals. So the photography is really magnificent. And I'm actually glad Bogart didn't return, because it allowed Greenstreet and Lorre to shine more. And I really think it's the best part for each, and especially for Peter Lorre, who plays, you know, believe it or not, he plays the romantic lead here. He's usually typecasted as psychos and serial killers and weird characters, but in here, his character is a very normal guy just trying to escape his problems and enjoy a better life with his girlfriend. So I really think he's awesome in there, and it's also a sad reminder for me of how Hollywood wasted his talents.
And they, I like really the way did that, typecast him, yeah, once he came over.
Yeah. Yeah, and all the way he directed a wonderful movie in Germany. It didn't work out, so he went back to Hollywood, and this is where, when he did all these Roger Corman movies, where he's really nothing more than a caricature of himself until he committed suicide. But about Three Strangers, I like the way we never know for sure if the Chinese legend was actually true and if the Chinese goddess was pulling everyone's strings or not. And it's up to every viewer to decide, and I really like it like that. And in this case, even staying in doubt is fun. And also another example of a great plot which can be produced with a tiny budget.
Excellent. Wonderful.
What's next?
So next overrated? You want to do overrated because you're saving underrated for last.
Yeah, overrated. So Pulp Fiction.
Wow, interesting choice.
I prefer defending movies than trashing them, so I won't elaborate as much on this one.
Sure, you don't have to trash. As I've said many times before, overrated doesn't mean bad. You could like the film. You just think everyone else is overstating it.
Yeah, it's just the gap between your own reception of it and how it's perceived generally. And in this case, I acknowledge that Pulp Fiction had a unique tone at the time of release and obviously an impressive cast. But one of the best movies ever made, and it's on the IMDb top 10. I mean, considering what other movies are out there, no way. Yeah. For me, it's no way. So I respect.
Are there other Tarantino films you feel are better? Or are you not a fan of Tarantino in general?
I like Jackie Brown better. I think Reservoir Dogs was more groundbreaking at the time. I'm not the hugest fan of Tarantino, no. You know, the bottom line for me, it's simple. When I'm not moved one way or another while watching a movie, it's case closed for me. This was a way for Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, and I do agree with you. I think Reservoir Dogs is a much better film. And people seem to just glance over it now.
Definitely. And I must say that I saw Pulp Fiction in theaters, but almost 1 year after its release. So the hype by that time was so huge that I don't see how I could not have been disappointed. If I saw it just like this, without any hype at all, maybe I would have caught it in a different way. But this, I just didn't enjoy it. Speaking on underrated movies, I listened to your interview with Chris Fiore last December.
Yes.
And his answer for most overrated movie really made me laugh because he said, fucking Star Wars, man, give me a break. It was really funny, and to me it was funnier than any Pulp Fiction joke.
Oh, and I was going to tell you, my favorite Tarantino is actually Inglourious Basterds, which I don't know if you liked it all or not.
I haven't seen it.
I just love everything about that film, actually.
Okay, well, I'll see it then.
Yeah, and maybe you won't like it. You know, it is still Tarantino, but he did something I always wanted somebody to do, which is his French characters are played by French actors, and his German characters are played by German actors, and his British character is played by a British guy, and the British guy who was born in Germany is a British guy who's born in Germany. Like, there's no Americans doing a bad accent.
That's great. Yeah, because I never recovered from Patrick Stewart being a French captain of the Enterprise. It's just,
yeah.
You know, when he speaks in French, it was just everybody is laughing here in France.
It's pretty, yeah. Just the fact that they didn't rename him.
Yeah.
I understand he was Jean-Luc in the script, but when they cast Patrick Stewart, they should have just changed it to Jonathan.
Definitely. Yeah.
And so now the one we've been waiting for, your underrated.
No, overrated.
Overrated. Now it's time for under.
Underrated. So underrated, Tucker, The Man and His Dream. It's funny because it's a movie about a guy who invents a new car, and I don't drive, I don't have a license, I hate cars, and I'm moved by this movie like few others do. And people say it's a minor film for Coppola, and that he only took the job because of financial problems he had following the Rumblefish and one from the heart failures. But to me, it's one of his best, and I also think that it's Jeff Bridges' best performance. And the way Jeff Bridges portrays this larger-than-life inventor trying to compete with the car industry is probably not historically accurate, but he captures what the American dream is all about in a nutshell, at least from a French point of view. You've got Martin Landau, who got an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor, and I think he won the Golden Globe for it. I read once that it was Tucker was a musical without the songs, and I really liked this description because the way some scenes are staged are close to musical choreographies, and you've got some transitions from one set to the other done live in front of the camera and use techniques usually seen in live musical and staged on stage, that was actually used already in One from the Heart. So from a director's point of view, it's very interesting. It's also interesting to replace this film in context, because it's hard not to compare Tucker's dream of independence in the automobile industry to Coppola's dreams of independence in the movies. What he did with American Zoetrope, creating this studio by himself. He tried to compete with the big studios as an independent, just as Tucker did with the big car companies. So I see this as one of the ultimate feel-good movie and one of the rare blockbuster with a soul. It must have followed me, because when you're being told that the failure, you do not have to be afraid of the failure in what you're trying to do, because the journey itself may be worth it anyway. This was kind of what I did, trying to work in what I'm working now. So it didn't come in my top three, because maybe it's number five or six, but it's definitely underrated in my book.
If you're keeping score at home, this marks two filmmakers who've put The Swimmer in their top three. That's Jean-Marie and also Douglas Mueller, who did the great feature film Repatriation. And guess what? Since recording that, Jean-Marie actually sent me, out of the kindness of his heart, a copy of The Swimmer on Blu-ray. And we watched it. And I have to tell you, it's a really interesting film. I'm not sure it would make my top three, but it's a fascinating and very original film. Okay, let's wrap this up. If you go to discoverfilm.net, there's all the podcasts, as well as a lot of the short films, and of course Jean-Marie's music video is also available there. You can also get links to the great feature films that we've discussed on the podcast. And you can even learn about the film festivals that I program. That's Film Invasion LA and the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. And I don't think there's anything else to tell you. Thanks for listening.